Live from nowhere, this is Derailed Trains of Thought. Welcome, folks, to episode 70 of Derailed Trains of Thoughts.
And we are nowhere.
With a K.
With a K. Okay. Oh, that makes sense because it's not completely dark here.
No, it's we're not in a void of blackness. We are actually on a teeming place of life in the depths of outer space.
Yeah, I think someone said we're inside some sort of giant head.
That would make some sense of some of the strange smells around here.
No pun intended. Okay. I don't know. Sans head. I'm stretching. Anyways.
Yeah, a little bit. But welcome, folks, to episode 70 of Dear Old Trains of Thought. This is our 6th anniversary, believe it or not.
I know. We've been doing this a while.
And in case you've never, this is your first time listening to us, you've picked a great place to start, maybe. But my name is
the best place to start.
But this is Timothy Deal.
I'm Nick Hayden.
And we are the podcast about writing, filmmaking,
storytelling,
and everything in between.
Yes.
Related to storytelling.
And today we're coming from you from inside a giant alien head.
Yes. I think it's relatively safe here. As long as we don't pick any bar fights, they seem to be some pretty shady characters, everywhere.
I miss Paralandra.
Yeah. Yeah. We've been to better places. We've been to worse places.
We have been to worse places. That's true.
Believe it or not.
This is kind of just a medium place.
This is kind of expected at this point, honestly. Floating alien head in space. Yeah, okay.
You know, walking animals, trees.
It's another
green
Thursday.
Green people. Yeah. Blue people. It's like red fish, blue fish, one fish, two fish. But they're not fish, most of them.
I wonder if we just had enough food coloring, we'd blend right in.
That's true. There we go. All right, then.
Or just eat a lot of carrots. All right. But we'll get down to business here. Let's do story school. Okay, so today's topic, where we decided to do something just kind of light, kind of fun, and that is aliens.
Aliens, because though you've probably never met one, they're in stories everywhere.
That's right, and they're all types. There are some scary ones, there are cute ones, there are
godlike ones.
Godlike ones, and big ones, small ones, everything in between.
Yeah, like on Men in Black, they're all kind of, there's a little tiny dog one.
Oh, yeah. And like Jetsons, I think they get like a little alien buddy at some point.
Oh, yeah, I think you're right. But so anyway, aliens have a wide range, and we want to kind of explore how do people use aliens inside their works.
Inside their stories.
So we kind of, for our own benefit, we have kind of 4 categories.
Mm-hmm.
3 basic ones and a 4th one that doesn't get taken up a lot.
Because we like our categories in story school, noticed.
It helps us function. If you're taking notes at home, this is A.
Now, is that A with a period after or A with a parentheses after?
Both.
Okay.
However you want to do it.
Okay.
Okay, so I think we'll start with the aliens as monsters.
Okay. This is probably the most common. Whether it's the... Would you include the abducting aliens with this, or are you talking more just the wanting to rip your throat out?
Let's start with the abducting aliens. Because those are kind of just... these sort of aliens kind of the terror in the night. They're basically horror movies... But they use aliens.
Yeah.
Because they need an explanation somehow.
yes.
So yeah, the X-Files, in many ways, the aliens were just sort of, they abducted you or they hit you or they took your body, body snatcher sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I think aliens is the modern equivalent of, I'm not sure before what, 50s?
Probably.
That you would have used.
Well, okay, I guess H.G. Wells is probably the first.
Okay.
Or the world's.
That's true.
Maybe there were some alien stories there, but that he was probably the first major alien story that I can think of.
And in this case, alien has embodied the unknown in the frightening aspect, in the we don't know what we're getting and it must be evil.
Mm. The terror of something out there in the darkness that you have no idea what it could be.
And some shows will make fun of the fact that, aliens are always here to take over. Doctor Who will make that. Every Christmas, there they are. They're ready to take over the world.
Yeah.
or
Marvin the Martian.
Marvin, exactly. There's a lot of, this sense that out there is scary in the void and must be evil. And when it gets here, it means us no good. Independence Day is a perfect example. I haven't seen the new movie, but the old movie with the giant ship and just it's just there to blow up stuff.
And I guess you talked about the 50s. I suppose that was a particularly prominent time for aliens too, in that it fed into the 20th century kind of uncertainty about as much as the 50s celebrated the triumph of technology and stuff, it also represented the, well, where are we going with this? Yeah. The future is unknown. We're into really weird new territory.
I watched the show Falling Skies, and it's all basically about alien invasion, and then you got this band of people who are trying to fight back, which is a very common kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, whenever you have those things, the aliens always look horrible. You know, they look like kind of weird green spider things, and they take over children, and by sticking this harness on the back of them, they start, you know, doing their bidding.
Uh-huh.
And this is a very common thing, is this sense that not only are the aliens evil, but they also look like snakes or
your worst
spiders
nightmare,
or germs or something.
Well, I know, like, when they were designing the alien in Alien,
which is a very good example.
Yeah, I know they very purposely went to, what's the guy's name? Geiger? There's some designer that, like, particularly for whatever freaky reason, like designing like these otherworldly things. I think it inspired by H.G. Lovecraft too.
Okay.
H.P. Lovecraft.
Cthulhu sort of stuff.
Yeah, the cults, the darkness, I guess in some ways Cthulhu, I guess his stuff was more other dimensionality stuff.
You know what? That's interesting now that you bring that up, because it seems like before this, the monster under the bed would have been religious demons and other gods, and, you know, the sort of things again, like in the Conans and then the H.P. Lovecraft. And then as we got scientific, it moved out of the religious realm.
That's an interesting
into this scientific realm, into out there in space, not out there in the unknown.
The other side.
The other side of the you know, the fairyland.
Yeah. Or the other. I mean, if you were to bring it closer to like actual, like Ghostbusters had that, or different dimension, like there's a fourth dimension. I guess Stranger Things actually plays with that.
And there's that's still a strand in storytelling, but not.
It's not as common of one.
No, you got the demon sometimes, but sometimes the blurring of the line between the demon and the alien is actually.
And sometimes people don't like Kingdom of the Crystal Skull actually tried to do, like, they're aliens, but they're not actually from outer space. They're from a different dimension. And people were like, you know, it just kind of it blurred the genres a bit they weren't familiar with.
So now that we have these aliens, I mean, it's very common now. It becomes a trope. But, I mean, it really was kind of rooted in the sense of that we've always had throughout human history of that force outside ourselves somewhere.
Well, and, you know, even obviously in modern America, we still have this, you know, whole terminology about, like, national aliens.
Yeah.
It's about, like, not trusting even other people who are just different from us. And then I guess that's getting more into the...
Should we go ahead and jump over there?
Yeah, let's go ahead and move into that category. The aliens as...
representatives of human types or personalities or Star Trek was one of the...
This is category B if you're taking notes.
B.
So, yeah, B.
Period. Parentheses.
Yeah. But yeah, Star Trek specialized in this stuff a lot.
I mean, especially the original series was very much, you know, it's the Russians or the Chinese kind of
analogs.
Analogs. Or the Vulcans were kind of the logical version of mankind.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been a tradition throughout sci-fi, especially, but the alien as a foil for humanity. Like, it teaches us something about ourselves by highlighting another thing in this alien, whatever it might be.
Yeah, because I think the Klingons were sort of the Russians for a long time, right? And then, like, in Star Trek VI is where the Cold War ended, so the War of the Klingons ended.
Exactly.
So it was very, very nice symmetrical that way.
Yeah, exactly. Battlefront 5 has a lot of these sort of aliens where they...
Oh, that's all over the place.
I mean, that you have the Drazi sort of the not... They don't think a lot sort of things. And then you have...
The Drazi are almost like the third world countries trying to be taken seriously by everyone else.
And then you have like the old European world, which is Londo.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Well, not just Londo, the whole...
Centauri Empire.
Yeah, Empire. What are the Narn? The Narn are interesting because they're probably the closest to sort of...
Are they like Eastern Europe?
Well, maybe. They may not have as much of a strictly human kind of analog, but they do have... they're similar to Klingons in some way, in that just by looks, they look like the aggressive
That's
species.
True. Yeah.
They're, you know, the lizard-like, all that kind of stuff. You first see Jakar, he himself seems pretty warlike, and it seems like he's going to be one of the bad guys. But then later on, he turns out to be one of the wisest.
He's a prophet, basically.
Yeah, one of the wisest characters in the whole show.
And I think that's a cool... Aliens are just almost an exaggerated version of what you can do with your human characters, and you can play with stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a Ray Bradbury story where these asteroids land on this planet, all there's just giant spiders everywhere, but they're all like poetic and very very evolved species.
Okay,
but the humans just can't stand being with them because they're spiders. They're giant spiders.
Uh-huh.
And it's a fascinating story because it's written through the point of view largely of the spiders, and it's just very light and airy and heavenly thoughts and stuff. And the humans just they can't deal with it.
Wow, that is interesting. And also another aspect of this is it not only is it showing us different kind of showing ourselves in a different kind of look, but you can also explore it in ways of what would our world be like if we were just made differently.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking of in A Wrinkle in Time, mm-hmm. which you and I just both read recently, not too long ago. What's that one place they go to where like the people who don't have eyesight?
Oh yeah.
It's like basically a whole planet of daredevils as in the superhero.
And they look frightening and ugly to people with eyes.
But they're very kind, but they rely solely on sound and the other senses essentially.
So in many ways RA was the alien as that monster under the bed, that thing that that irrational fear. And the B is very much just the other, as in, you know, the other tribe, the other people, the other race.
Yeah. And, I mean, in fantasy, you have all these races, and in certain sci-fis, it kind of takes the place of the different race.
Yeah, exactly. And you have, and like you said, sometimes it just says, it's just more of a what if. What if we lived in a world where this happened, and you have, you know, I can't think, actually. No, like in Star Wars, they're not so much like... Star Trek has like a sense that these are certain types of people. Star Wars is like, there's just a fantasy race. It's just...
Yeah.
You know, the Wookiees, they just live in trees. What if we lived in trees and looked like bears? You know, they'd be Ewoks or Wookiees.
It is a funny thing about Star Wars, too, because, I mean, to a sense, all the different races have, you know, they obviously have some... Like Wookiees all have some similar traits, the kind of this
Life
kind
day.
Of... And a very stubborn loyalty to a certain person and, you know, these sort of things. But in another way, a lot of the races are very, like a character for one race isn't necessarily always like another character.
It really is almost just appearance changes in largely in Star Wars. It's not necessarily the sort of, you know, all Vulcans are logical or all, or like all, Ferengi are obsessed with money.
Yeah, there's definitely some of that, but it's also very more cosmetic in some ways than
it's a very cosmopolitan version of Alien.
Yeah. Like I remember the Twi'leks, the ones with the I know there was a thing where a lot of them were slave girls essentially, but then they're also like I think there was one of the Jedi Masters was also a Twi'lek, and so she dealt sort of with the ramifications of being a role model in some ways.
I suppose, if you're a giant slug, you just have to be a drug crime lord because what else are you going to do?
Okay, well, the Hutts are a whole different thing. They're a whole crime family.
But
there are other exceptions.
And so Star Wars runs this kind of more, it really has much more of a fantasy attitude towards aliens.
Yeah, most of the term alien is not really used anywhere in it, and you don't even think about them.
It's not really the point is they're just fantasy races, largely. Yeah. So it's not really the same thing as the science fiction version of alien, which is an other, which is usually used in a more of a thematic sort of way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what's our next category?
C is aliens as God or saviors or the evolved version, the answer. Interstellar. Has the five-dimensional aliens.
Yes. And we've talked a little bit about this on here, I think, before. It's always amused us how sometimes the most atheistic science fiction will have these deistic, like...
First ones from Babylon 5.
Yeah, alien gods, essentially. Babylon 5. What else? Oh,
Stargate.
2001. Yeah. Stargate is different. It's a little different because they... Well, there might be some of the... I've only watched like the first season and a half or so, so there's a lot I don't know. You probably know more because you saw
I haven't seen... No, I've heard from Zach.
Okay. Well, but you've seen... What was that one series with Rumpelstiltskin?
Oh, yeah. Star Gate universe.
Okay.
Which is great.
So yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's different. But at least in the beginning of SG-1, the godlike aliens are pretty much exposed as frauds.
That's true, but the entire time. There's another group of aliens, I think, who made the gates. The Sword Gates. That they ascension. Like you can Jackson. What's the main scientist's name? Something Jackson, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yeah, Jackson.
Anyways, he does this kind of ascension himself, and it's like this otherly realm.
Oh, does he really?
And then he comes back down. And
But
you have the sense that Contact. Have you ever seen the movie Contact?
I haven't.
Jodie Foster, interesting movie. But you know, they find aliens, and they have no more war. They're all at peace. They don't understand. Humans are still flawed, and these aliens come, and they want to make us better.
Okay.
And sometimes you get you know, some science fiction will mesh these. Well, they want to make us better, but also it kills part of what it means to be human.
Mm. Yeah, doesn't Star Trek kind of have some of these? I mean, there's the Q, obviously.
Well, and then I remember watching, I'm not going to remember the name of it, but Gene Roddenberry had various other ideas. And there was one show on like a, you know, back in the kind of same style of like the Hercules Xena stuff, but it was science fiction.
Uh-huh.
I wish I knew where these aliens came down to Earth and was trying to make, you know, Roddenberry had a lot of this utopian version of aliens. I mean, Star Trek, there's no war, there's no money.
He was trying to do utopian stuff everywhere.
And there was these aliens that came down and they were kind of trying to help us move forward in that.
Okay.
And I think the whole idea of V, if I remember right, is they came down to help us with that, but they were actually evil.
Oh.
They looked angelic, but they were really lizard people and ate us and stuff.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So it's funny because C here, the letter C, is basically just the flip side of A, which is really, it's just taking a religious idea and putting alien clothes again.
Yeah, that's true.
Is that as humans, we have these religious ideas of both perfection and evil. And once this modern realm came around, we're like, aliens.
That's true. It's interesting, though, there is still kind of a difference between how they portray, even if they do the aliens as God, sometimes it's in a good sense, is in like, this is what we're all going to become someday.
Yeah.
And in other cases, it's in the sense of, here's these all-knowing things. They claim they know everything, but they really don't.
Why does God need a spaceship?
Essentially. And it's funny because, again, Babylon 5 sort of did both of these in a sense. Like, they love the first ones, at least some of the first ones, and then but in the end, they're like, okay, you guys have to go.
We got to be our own thing.
We got to be our own thing. So it was like, we're going to become this someday, but until we do, you can't be messing with us.
Well, and it was interesting. Babylon 5 had the first ones, which are the oldest aliens. They were basically godlike, and they didn't interfere much. And then they had, like, the youngest of the first ones, which were the Vorlons and the Shadows.
Right, I forgot
and,
about
and
that.
They played almost a more very blatantly religious role.
Yeah.
In the formation of people.
I forgot there were first ones before the Shadows and the...
Oh, yeah, like Lorien.
Yeah, okay. You know? Yeah, that's true. I forgot
what
about
What do you
that.
Want? Who are you?
Yeah. Okay, so they did kind of play it both ways in some ways.
Yeah, because a lot of most of the ways people play aliens come from a very secular humanist sort of point of view. It was like, these are, humanity is evolving, and we're using aliens to help show how humans should be, could be, will be, won't be.
I suppose, you know, we were on Paralander last time.
Yeah.
In the Space Trilogy, which is one of the only cases I can think of a... Christian space story. The aliens are kind of the unfallen version of humanity.
Yeah.
So they are another race, essentially. It kind of falls in that category in a sense. But it's kind of a what if? What if humanity hadn't fallen into sin? So I guess, you know, it goes into that category. So, I mean, yeah.
Okay, then there's the fourth category. This is not done very well, very often that I've written. I think it's done most in very hard science fiction, which is the alien as truly alien, meaning... It's almost impossible to understand. Like, they're not analogs of humans. They're not trying to talk about humans. They're just like, they're completely different beings.
And we can't even barely understand them.
And the two instances I have is, I remember reading Andromeda Strain ages ago, and my memory is that they were thinking, well, maybe the aliens, how would we even know what they were even trying to do? They're just, how would we even connect with them? Mm-hmm. And then that's almost the entire theme in Solaris by Stanislaw Lem, which is a very heady, very good science fiction book. Okay. I don't know if the movie's any good.
I thought that was the one you saw that,
we make fun of it all the time.
Well, then so you said it wasn't very good.
Well, I think there's also another one. There's two Solaris movies.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I see. So I was confused.
But the book is very, very good, but very intellectual, very heady stuff, because you're basically talking about the idea of an alien force that you can't, it's beyond you, and you're trying to find a connection and communicate, and it's just...
Okay.
And that's a fascinating idea, and you don't see it much, especially in popular movies, except in the sense that, like, I'm doing things and you can't understand. But, you know, it's not that. But some hard science fiction does it really well.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of other examples. And, yeah, I haven't read that much hard science fiction like that. The only thing I could come close to, which probably doesn't count, but was worth talking about, would be Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
I mean, that's kind of on the... It's on the spectrum of that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, you get the sense that the humans and aliens want to try to communicate. It's not really stated how successful they wind up being, but it's kind of this first... The whole movie is about setting up this first introduction, basically. Yeah. And there's this kind of, like, awe and wonder of, like, having met something else.
Something else. I think that's, in some ways, almost the most fascinating... distinctly alien use of alien. I mean, because a lot of the other use of alien, even a fantasy setting, might be you could do the same thing differently, you know, with other names, with demons or angels or prophets or whatever.
Or in the show like Doctor Who, you can do tackle all these things.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. But you very rare, you know, but I think the alien motif for this kind of fourth category is something you don't... The only other place you get it, I guess, in literature that I can think offhand is on... Like, Till We Have Faces, like, trying to encounter God.
Okay. I guess I would say, going back to the space trilogy, there's some of this, not necessarily with the alien races per se, but I remember some of just the locations were vastly different than anything I had read in or seen in science fiction before. Because Lewis didn't write just like, oh, here's a water planet, or here's a forest or a desert planet.
Yeah.
It's like, no, these were really foreign alien landscapes that he was describing. And it was really kind of mind-twisty to try to visualize.
When, I guess 2001 really is a movie that tries to do this, because the last scenes of 2001 where Dave goes to the monolith and then you have the whole Star Child thing is really trying to be like, this is beyond human comprehension. Mm-hmm. This is something else.
Yeah.
You know, something new, something beyond mere humanity.
And I think part of the trick of doing that in a story is how do you create something that's beyond human comprehension?
Exactly.
It's just going to come across, I mean, unless your audience totally buys it, it's just going to come across as gobbledygook.
Yeah, so you have to have some language to connect.
Yeah.
And
that's quite a challenge.
Yeah, so that's why I think you see it, especially don't see it too often in the visual medium.
Mm.
Though in some ways... It might work well, yeah, because you have to have a certain amount of understanding to even communicate it.
Yeah, and I think you have to have a certain sort of sensibility to, like, there has to be some sort of patterns or order to it, or it just is just paint on a canvas.
Speaking of Andromeda Strain, I feel like the Sphere by Michael Crichton does some of this. You ever read Sphere?
No.
Like, they just find this alien, a device in the ocean, and they're trying to unravel it. And I think there's that sense of otherness, that sense of just completely foreign... And I don't remember even what the ending is, but yeah.
Okay. Interesting.
So, should we wrap this up then?
Let's wrap this up.
Okay, so anyways, we just kind of touched on examples of aliens, but I think as a creator, or even as a viewer, the most fascinating thing about aliens is what it tells us about humans.
Yeah.
Either our deep fears, our deep longings to be better, or just, you know, kind of help us see our own foibles or prejudices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in the extreme version, to say, hey, bring us into... contact with, wait, the world is beyond humans.
Yeah.
There are things outside of us.
Yeah. It's funny, though. I've been quoting this recently from a book that, again, another book from our book club, Man
Maybe
Alive.
Maybe you have a segment we just talk about and our book club books.
Possibly. Although I like having new fodder to insert into our story schools. But the quote I keep coming back to or thinking about a lot is one where the character goes on this long journey around the world to kind of come back to home. I guess in a certain roundabout way, this whole exploration of the world beyond our own kind of makes us come back to our own. And then it's like, wow, so this is what we're like.
That is awesome. I think that is the purpose of aliens, to bring us back to who are humans.
Yeah.
So
interesting.
All right. Awesome.
So with that, we will move on into soundtrack. my soundtrack today, decided to go with something from old Contra.
Contra.
I never really played a whole lot of Contra.
Played some, and I just got killed a lot.
Yeah, that's yeah, exactly. That's probably what happened to me most of the time too. But Contra, if you don't know it, it's a shoot 'em up, basically aliens evasion type thing.
Yeah,
you know,
that's why not?
Yeah, that's all you really need to know about it. And the name of this remix is Aliens in My Waterfall, which I think is a great title worthy of OC remix. Done by a group of guys from Sweden, it sounds like. So I will attempt to their names here. Eric Verreven, Ivan Hakstock, Jorito, and Sixto Sounds. We'll go with that.
We'll apologize to anything we butchered.
Which was probably all of it. So, I actually have not listened to very much of this, but at least the first 15 seconds sounded awesome. So if it's really bad after that, I apologize. And we're back.
And that wasn't awful.
I'm glad to hear that. Probably the least I've ever listened to a soundtrack before choosing it ever.
But Aliens in the title? It's a go.
Yeah. It's a good one. All right. So, like we said earlier, folks, this is episode 70.
70.
It's our six-year anniversary.
That's crazy.
It is crazy.
We've been podcasting almost as long as Theo's been alive.
Yeah. It's it's pretty wild. I'm trying to think what else to compare it to. We've podcasted six times longer than the recent Muppets show is on TV.
It's just sad. It makes me sad. But 1 year longer than Captain Kirk's 5-year mission.
That's true. So yeah, that's something to be proud of, yes. I think. for today, in honor of that, we decided we're going to attempt something here.
Yeah, because we have various segments, and we bring new ones in sometimes. Old ones go out sometimes. But we thought the best thing to do in a big-ish day like this is to kind of put all our segments together into one segment. So, Tim, you have the name for this.
The official name. This is our take on a bit of live Crackpot Pun Project story brainstorming from the interwebs.
Dun, dun, dun. So here's how this is going to work, we think. Uh-huh. So we're going to go to the interwebs.
Yes.
We're going to get a random story generator. We're going to live brainstorm
the story. Or are we going to live brainstorm the story, or are we going to just tell the story as we're live brainstorming it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You're going to just...
That's our project here.
Impromptu. We're making... Our project tonight is to make a short story for you guys live.
Which will involve puns.
Which will, in theory.
In theory. And then after that, give you our take on it.
Our take on what we just did.
Now, are we going to take turns with this? Or should we just try to tell a story together?
It's live brainstorming. I think we'll just go with it.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll just see how we can manage. All right.
I forgot to include one thing in that title.
What's that? Cinema Selections?
Oh, I forgot that too. Oh, no.
We'll have to make a movie version after the take on Tales.
Yes, I guess so. Okay. Or here's what we'll do. After we do give our take on it, we'll do an what if there was a cinema version of it.
There you go.
That's what I was
okay.
thinking.
Okay, we got it. Awesome.
So,
I think that's everything.
Yes.
So our project update is new story.
Well, I included the project in the title. So.
I know.
Let's revise the title here. So this is our take on a bit of live Crackpot Pun Project brainstorming from the interwebs if it was selected for cinema.
There we go. Awesome.
Okay,
so I have this random plot generator from writingexercises.co.uk.
Okay.
It has a main character, a second character, a setting, a situation, a theme, and a character action. I don't think we'll use all those. Necessarily, but let's get the character.
Okay.
We have a young man in his late teens who is very shy.
Oh, wow. This is strangely appropriate.
I could do this. Do we want a second character then?
Sure.
Okay. A woman in her late 20s who can be quite easygoing.
I'm not sure how to combine these two.
Just a romance.
But if he's in his... Is he
early? His late 20s and... late 20s and late teens.
Okay, late teens.
Doable.
Okay. Doable. Okay. We're not going to get in trouble for the law.
No. Setting. It begins in the hospital.
Oh, okay.
See, here we go. We got this going. Do you want a theme, character, action, or situation? We'll add one more.
Let's do situation.
Someone is driven out of their home.
Wow.
Okay, once upon a time, I don't know, you can start this one, Tim.
Once upon a time, there was a woman who was recovering from, she was in the hospital recovering from some abrasions after she had been in a fight with her landlord after being kicked out of her home.
Okay. The woman's name?
Melinda Gates.
Melinda Gates.
Yeah.
Okay. In the bed next to her was Frederick Johnson.
Okay.
Who was painfully shy, and in his attempts to avoid speaking to people at school, which is very hard, and had his head down, he managed to fall down the steps and break his leg. And so he was in the hospital.
I see.
Recovering.
And they were in the same recovery
room. They were in the same room. Yeah. I don't know why. They don't normally do that.
I was going to say, do they do co-ed rooms?
No.
I didn't know they did that in the hospital.
They probably don't. It was a mistake.
Okay.
And the nurse was trying to rectify it, but
Frederick had long hair for most of his life,
yes.
And he was a little on the feminine side, so it was an honest mistake.
So they're trying to do the paperwork, but they were just hammered. It was a full moon that night. So
there was werewolves running around outside.
Okay, so there were werewolves.
Yes.
So there's werewolves going around.
Because the hospital was full of werewolf patients. So that was part of the reason why they were so packed. I'm providing
no pun intended.
Here. What?
Packed.
Yes, exactly what I meant.
Okay. And so Frederick is just trying to stay out. He's terrified at this point. There's werewolves. He's in the wrong room. He's embarrassed that he fell down the stairs. He's been blushing for the last 3 hours. Okay. So they think he has a fever, but he's just
every time he shifts, his leg just kind of throbs and he winds up howling in pain.
Yeah. And so the very easygoing lady wants to try to make him feel better. She's like,
oh yeah. She feels, and she realizes she's had a rough night, but everyone's been having a rough night around here.
Exactly. So she wants to encourage him, find something to engage him with, and she happens to be, in her free time, quite a good juggler.
Okay. Is she from the circus?
Not anymore.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I suppose we're going to make some jugular joke. That's going to be the end. No, go for the duck.
No,
go for the jug. We apologize to all our listeners.
Come on. So what's her first attempt here?
So her first attempt, she wants to juggle something because that's how she's always used it for people to kind of loosen the situation because it's just completely out of the blue and she's not pretty, she's easygoing, but she doesn't know how to engage with this awkward teenager. So she's like, let's do something interesting. So she gets just some of the stuff on their table, jello bowls and stuff that she had left over, and she's juggling them. And he looks at her just kind of strangely, and like he just shakes his head and moves away, and he's just like, he really doesn't want to be there anymore.
And he also kind of rolls his eyes and says, "You're doing your technique completely wrong," and he's just disgusted by her shoddy attempts.
And she's a little affronted by this because her father was in the circus. And was quite a good juggler, and she fancies herself good. So she says, "Well, why don't you do better?"
And he replies, "Well, I haven't really wanted to juggle since my fifth grade birthday, when I got chased around by a guy juggling. He thought he knew what he was doing by juggling all these knives and stuff, but he was slowly losing control, and like one of his knives hit my cat, and ever since I've hated juggling, even though my own father used to juggle chainsaws for a living. I just can't stand the trade anymore."
It's the memory cut deep.
Boy, you're sharp tonight.
But she wants to egg him on. She's like, he's talking to me. And there's just a lot of howling going out in the hallways. And who knows how long we're going to be stuck here. So she's like, no, seriously. You show me how you can juggle better. Because I don't think you can. You're chicken.
Oh, and that really rouses feathers up because he doesn't like being called chicken.
No, exactly.
He's like Marty McFly that way.
So, okay. So she's egging him on, basically.
Okay, so he decides to go along with it, and he looks around to try to find something that he can juggle, and the closest thing he can find are M&Ms. His mom brought him a bag earlier.
Yeah.
So he's tossing these around, but one gets a little too much latitude, and it winds up hitting the sprinkler above, and sets off the fire alarms to the whole place. So pretty soon, they're all soaking wet from the sprinkler system.
And the smell of wet werewolves is just atrocious throughout the hospital.
Yeah, and because the fire alarm is going on, now they have to wheel everyone out. So at first, the woman's not sure whether she should laugh or whether she should be really ticked off at the guy.
Yeah, but she's pretty easygoing, so she's like, hey, that was pretty sweet. And M&Ms. And
yeah, okay, I got it.
I just not digging the bag I'm coming from. But
wet.
But why was she in the hospital originally?
She had gotten into a fight with her landlord.
Oh, her landlord
being kicked out of her
apartment. Okay, so she's being kicked out of her room again, and she's like, oh, of course. It's just kind of her life right now. That she got a room in your hospital room, kicked out of her thing. It just seems part of the thing, and then she's like, well, good going, Frederick. And he's like, I told you I didn't want to juggle. Every time I'm around jugglers, something bad happens.
And while they're being wheeled into another room, suddenly one of the recovering werewolves, who is basically trying to revert back to his human side, runs up to their bedside and says, you, I know you two are fated to save us all, and you must do it. He gargles, and then one of the nurses tackles him and drags him away.
Now, this really freaks out Frederick because the last thing he wants is anything to do with prophecies, with things he should be doing. He really just wants to melt in the bed and be done with the night life. Anyway, she's like, it's, a fae spirit comes upon her. She's like, they're wet. They've been doing crazy stuff. This werewolf just said stuff. She's like, let's get out of here. let's just make a, and he's
make
like
a break for
make
it
make a break for it
and he you know, he lifts up his head, his leg, and
she, he's like, seriously? But she's like, no, seriously, look, no one's gonna pay any attention, we're just stuck here, we're not having any fun, I'll put you in a wheelchair, we'll get out here, we'll go Steak and Shake or something, it doesn't matter, we'll just go, let's go and have a, live our lives, okay? Frederick suddenly sees with this sense of what if, because most of his life has always been what if I did something, and he never does. So it's just that weird night, and you know, he's like, okay, let's do it. So she gets up and unplugs her stuff and gets a wheelchair, and he gets in, and they go to the elevator, and they start it, and the elevator gets stuck.
Not only stuck, it starts shaking. Like, it's not moving anywhere, but it's, the lights are flashing. It's like all red. It's definitely an end-of-the-world disaster here. The lady just turns to the guy and says, oh, you really know how to show a lady a good time. And he goes, life's all ups and downs with me. Okay, that didn't make sense. You're on a roll with actually telling a story, and I went for puns, and it suddenly came to a screeching stop.
He's like, well, I don't know. I'm going to make some stay and shake sort of things since they're in the elevator. But anyways, I'm trying too hard. So they're just stuck, and they're like, this is not going to work. And then they hear a crack and a shifting, and they're sure that any moment they're going to just fall. And suddenly they do. They're on the second floor, and then they land on the first floor. And they're pretty good, but they're pretty shaken up. And
they suddenly realize from the howl, from moans, that some of the werewolves had escaped and were in elevator shaft that had been jumping on top of the elevator car, which is what was causing all that stuff. But they didn't expect the elevator to suddenly drop like that. But now they're like, okay, well, how do we get out of here? And they start slamming buttons, trying to yell for help. No one's responding because the whole hospital is in a state of uproar due to multiple reasons.
So they got to find their way out. They're trying to force open the elevator doors, and it just, you know, there's something, it just isn't working. So she's like, we're going to climb up the top. And he's like, my leg, it's broken. She's like, it doesn't matter. You can do it. She's like, no, seriously, it hurts. She's like,
do I have to do everything myself?
Yes. So
she's beginning to lose her patience with this kid.
Patient.
Yeah, this patient. you know, she's been trying to be positive this whole time, but this kid just keeps dragging along every step of the way, having to carry her. And like, it's like, come on, break a leg, will you?
And he just insulted. He's like, I'm done. I'm going to sit here. I'm going to wait for the police to come. Look, my life was 10 times better before you came into my room, or I came into your room. Whatever happened, we don't know. So why didn't you just get out here? And she's like, fine. And so she lifts up the thing. She crawls out of the top of the elevator, and she starts climbing the rope to the open door on the second floor.
When then suddenly there's a loud screeching sound, and the boy starts yelling again because, like, there are werewolves coming through. And he's like, and he starts yelling for help from someone, anybody. And so she's like, okay. She scrambles back down.
This is where the werewolves, you can hear going through. It's the juggler. Go for the juggler.
Oh, there. So, okay.
They really do it right there.
Okay, you got your line in. Yep. Okay, awesome. So she grabs him by the scruff of the neck, pulls him out of the elevator with one hand, because, you know, she, part of her other circus act was
strong lady.
Yeah, strong lady, basically. We didn't mention that before. Nope. Because we got distracted by the juggling and the M&Ms and werewolves and all that stuff.
And this is a treatment. This is not quite the complete story.
Yes, obviously.
So so they're stuck there because there's werewolves up in the second floor thing coming. There's one trying to get in the bottom, and he's there kind of just freaking out. And she's like, be quiet. We're going to get out of here. And they don't know what they're going to do exactly. And then I want to find ways that their juggling becomes like their salvation here. So we got to go up farther. So she starts manhandling herself up. She's like, I can't do it. Like, it's like in gym class. We pull yourself up the rope. He's like, exactly. She's like, you can do it. You can do it. He's like, okay, I'm going to do it.
And so he grabs the rope and with just sheer determination pulls himself afterwards, up after her. And they make it past the second floor where the wolves are still kind of like recovering. And then they get to the third floor and the elevator door is there, is open like just a crack. And they're like, they start trying to figure out if they can get through that elevator door.
She's like, okay, we need to wedge it open somehow. So they're trying to kind of swing the cable a little bit. And he wedges his casted foot into it.
Oh, nice.
So, and then he kind of twists and it opens a little more. And then she can kind of wedge herself through. And then she helps pull him over. And he's just completely ashen at this point, because that was painful.
Yeah. So while they're on the floor, basically heaving, trying to catch their breath, suddenly one of the other werewolves shows up, and they don't have much left in them, but the boy reaches into his pocket, pulls out an iPhone, and hurls it at the guy. When it hits the werewolf, it lets out a spark, and because the werewolf is still wet from the sprinklers, it suddenly electrocutes him, and or at least shocks him enough that he's stunned long enough for the lady to take him down.
And they're both looking at each other like, that was awesome. And then they get up, like, where are we going to go? The roof. Because you always go to the roof when you're attacked by creatures of anything, because then you're trapped.
Makes sense.
So they're going up the stairs, kind of painfully, kind of slowly. She's helping them. She's like, hey, you're not too bad. And he's like, you're not too bad yourself, you know, having some sort of nice dialogue together. They get to the top. It's dark, you know, it's full moon, but that's all there is. There's just clouds. You know, what a horrible night, sort of Castlevania sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they hear more creatures coming up after them. They need help, and, you know, like, we need to make some sort of signal. So they're looking for some sort of flare or something to say, hey, we're here. But then they see that, the Samaritan
helicopter.
Helicopter's there.
Okay. So do either one? I don't think either one.
Neither of them know how to drive it, but they figure.
The boy says, I know what we'll do. I saw this in a movie once. Let's siphon all the gas out of it. Let it stream down, and then we'll get far enough away, and then we'll make the werewolves think we're in the helicopter, and we'll blow them up if we light the gas from distance.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
She's like, all right, sounds good. Do you have a hose or something for a siphon?
And he's like, He starts fumbling through his pockets. And how did he? Did we say how he broke his leg?
He fell down steps at school while avoiding people's gazes.
Oh, so no. He's like, all I got is a pocket knife and this ticket to see Star Trek 3. It's replaying at a big theater near here.
And she's like, no wonder you're shy. At least you should go see Star Trek 2. She's like, what? You watch Star Trek? Yeah. It's cool. Yeah. Anyways, and then they hear the wolves again, and they're like, oh, no.
And he says, Star Trek 3 is really underrated, by the way. But anyway.
So they run to the helicopter. They're looking for something to use.
Out of desperation, she grabs his penknife and tries jamming it into the helicopter. It doesn't really go very deep, though. It just lets out like a trickle of, and it's not even gasoline. It's like oil or something.
She's like, this might not work. And he's like, no, we can make this happen somehow. And
he's like, it was a slick idea.
Never mind. be continued, no.
But she's like, well, maybe I'll try somewhere else. And so she goes a little farther. This time she grabs a nearby wrench she finds and like uses it to hammer it into the helicopter. And this time she's able to get a nice big spillage out of it. And
nice.
Now the gas is drizzling out.
And now she's like, hey, can you make a spark with your cell phone again? He's like, I don't know how that happened.
And he's like, and I left the cell phone downstairs.
So, but he's like, he's kind of a geology geek, okay?
Okay.
And he carries some rocks in his pocket just because he's like that. A lot of times he'll just juggle them when he's alone.
Oh, okay.
Because it's kind of cool to juggle cool, you know, like geodes and stuff.
Well, like, you know what they say about geology. It rocks.
It rocks, yeah. Yeah. So.
Sorry, that was a
you're
cheap
digging.
One. Yeah. And that one's so old, it's a fossil. But anyway.
So he's looking through, he's like, I might have something here. And he finds some flint and he starts like just smacking it, gives a spark. He's like, we probably should have been farther away.
Yeah. So suddenly they barely miss igniting themselves on fire. So they run off to another side. The werewolves have broken through. They start rampaging through like air ducts that are nearby and things, trying to find where they're at, which they're hidden on the opposite side. Basically, they're trying to hide behind like a skylight, you know, like one of those big, those ones that kind of bubble up, not skylight. Is that what they call them?
I know. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I don't think so.
Whatever it's called. And they're like, this is probably no good. We're too transparent out over here. We got to find a better hiding place. And she's like, no, we just got to light the gas. It's getting all over everywhere. If we let it spread too far, it will blow us up.
Yeah. And so he runs over. He's like, okay, Well, he doesn't really run. He hobbles. Well, actually, army crawls.
Okay. And he's like, he starts tearing his shirt so he could use it as basically as a flare or something to ignite the thing and throw it. And he's like, this cost me like $5 from Goodwill. I'm never going to be able to, this is going to be a real hit to my budget.
She's like, well, if we get out of this, I'll buy you a new shirt.
He keeps banging the rocks together and it starts attracting the werewolf's attention. And because he can't get them the spark again. And so she's like, here, let me have them.
And so she takes them and she tries it herself and it's not going very well. And so she throws one up. Never mind, that's not going to work. That's dumb. She keeps trying,
I thought you were going to have her juggle them. So, like, she throws one up and then, like, catches it and then throws it. Wham!
Yeah, that's kind of what I was going for. Yeah, let's do it. Yeah, it's like her secret. Yeah.
Her secret throwdown.
Her throwdown move. And just slams in it. Sparks. It catches the shirt on fire. And that's they throw that. Wait.
Yeah.
It's not soaked. Is it? Did you soak it?
I don't know if they said, we'll say they soaked it earlier.
Okay, okay, and then they throw it, and it lights the things on it, right? The werewolves come up, they fall, and you can see it just snaking quickly towards the helicopter, and all the werewolves look at it, and it goes, boom! And the sky is red, and there's shrapnel going everywhere, and fires, and Frederick and Melinda are just looking at it, and then they look at each other, and it's kind of a nice look. And then, they're like, we got to get out of here. So they start moving, and to the far corner at that point, you can hear sirens starting to come. Mm-hmm. And they're like, we got to get their attention. There's a couple pieces of shrapnel around. They want to wave it at somebody, but they figure they can juggle it, it'll draw their attention. So they're juggling back and forth together, and it's no one can miss it. And they're like, they're up there. There's survivors up there.
And one of the policemen says, they're really good. They're on fire.
We didn't start the fire. And so they get those the trampoline things from the firemen. And Malin's like, I'll go first. And she goes first and jumps and she has fun. And then he's like, because this is kind of the biggest thing he's done this night. It's been like.
Yeah. Not only doing all the stuff fighting with through a broken leg, even though he didn't have a leg to stand on, just battling his way up to the top, and then but now having to leap,
she does go. They go together.
Oh, they go together. Okay, that makes sense. It's not so much of a leap of faith then.
Yeah, because if the story is about him connecting with another person,
yes, that's true.
So.
All right.
So
we better wrap this up.
They
like they wrap them up in the net.
Yeah. So they hold each other's hands and they jump down and they laugh and then he groans horribly, said, I think I broke my leg again.
My other leg.
And then she laughs and says, I don't know, something clever. And then we pan for a year later and they're having dinner together somewhere.
And they're talking about their great circus act. Blinda and Frederick and their great balls of fire.
There we go. The end. All right. So.
So what did we think of that story, Nick?
Okay. So our take on great balls of fire.
It felt a little thrown together.
It did throw a little thrown together. Like they just tossed it and they were just trying to keep the pieces up in the air.
Yeah.
The juggling was an interesting idea, but I'm not sure it was more than a kind of just a just for laughs. It didn't play deeply into their characters as much. It could have, I think.
They were trying. You could tell they were definitely going with something with trying to make the juggling meaningful.
But I think in the hands of a better author, that they could have really pulled that out and made it symbolic or meaningful. I mean, it was cool they both did, but it just kind of came out of nowhere.
It almost caught on, but I think they dropped the ball.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah.
Then when the werewolves.
It was an unusual way to use werewolves.
But there was no setup again.
They came out of nowhere.
Like, if they would spin a little bit, it could be like a cool kind of a disaster movie, horror movie sort of setup. Because it's kind of set up like that. Like, they're trying to survive and everyone else is dying and it's chaos. And, it's kind of a cool kind of Cloverfield or supposed to hide an adventure sort of deal. But you need at least a little more excuse than just, hey, it's a full moon and there's lots of werewolves.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's kind of a hairy execution,
yeah,
I'd say.
But anyways, I think there's a lot of, I think there's certainly a lot of potential that the creators had some sense.
It felt like it needed a couple more revisions.
It really did.
It was almost like their first draft.
I know, like they had all these ideas, but they just didn't gel. And they could just make that happen. I think you might have the making of a decent sci-fi original movie.
Yeah. So what was the name of it again? Great Balls of Fire?
Great Balls of Fire.
Yeah. You know, I look forward to seeing what they come up with in the future. Now, if we were to cast this novel, who would be the two characters?
Like, you mean if we put it into a movie?
Yes. If it was a cinema movie. Yes.
Yeah. I think honestly, as a cinema, it would work pretty well, just because you could, first off, movies don't need an explanation as much. You could just do stuff, you know, unlike novels where you kind of want questions answered.
Sure.
And then you could focus it, and you know, in a movie, like especially an indie movie, just with two main characters and some random monsters. I mean, it'd be cheap to make, and you could get people to watch it.
Sure.
So I like it. The title might have to change for a movie.
Yeah, I feel like for the female character, you really need like a Scarlett Johansson or a she's Black Widow, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you really need to bring the star power there. The guy character, he could be just
about whoever. Yeah. Yeah, he needs to be just kind of dorky. Kind of painfully shot, you know, and he just kind of, he wants to be invisible.
Yeah.
You could almost, just call it the Invisible Man. No.
It could almost be like an alternate universe with Scarlett Johansson, whoever plays Spider-Man now.
Oh, that's true. It'd be he would be pretty good at that, actually.
Yeah, it'd be very, very similar.
And you could add, you know, and if you put it in a movie, you could have some, you know, the act one could be kind of their stories leading up to this. Because in a book, you can just start and they do exposition talking, whatever. But in a movie, you want to show it. So you can show him at school and her with her landlords. So he's trying to avoid things and has an accident. And she's, you know, having an argument. She's in the heat of things.
Yes.
And has an accident. So they're like opposites, you know, fire and water sort of deal.
Mm-hmm.
And then they end up in the wrong hospital room and it can be very quirky. You know, be one of those quirky indie films.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it'd be good.
Given a little more work, I think you got a winner on your hands.
I think that'll work, yeah.
All right. Well, we need to wrap this up.
Okay.
So I hope you enjoyed our combination of things. That story went on a little longer, I think, than we had anticipated.
No, we didn't. We kept trying to get an ending.
When we kept trying to make it a full story, as opposed to, there was a couple of times I was really tempted to just leave it off on to be continued.
But I know a couple of times I said, I'm like, to be, well, we can try to get it here.
Yeah, but that was our take on a bit of Live Crackpot Pun Project story brainstorming from the interwebs, if it was cinema selection.
So, if you like that, wait till episode 140 when we do it again. If you didn't like that,
I don't blame you.
You got 140. So, okay, so let's go ahead and finish up
the 70th episode with our contact info.
Yes, you can get to listen to our podcast at derailtrainsofthought.blogspot.com.
Subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher. I keep saying I'm going to update the YouTube, and I will.
Eventually YouTube.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there are some episodes on there.
A lot of episodes
on there. It's about 10 behind or so.
I guess we're up and running soon again. Well, by the time this comes out, we'll have been hijacking again.
Weekly Hijack is on its return, only because Once Upon a Time is coming back. So.
And we can't not hijack
it. I know. It would just feel wrong not to at this point.
I'm not sure we would watch it if we weren't hijacking again.
It's possible. But yeah, so definitely go check all that stuff out and leave us a comment somewhere, either on the website or if you want to leave us a review on iTunes, that would be very helpful.
You know what we need? We need to have like a reader's feedback and they record their own whatever that segment was just called. I can't remember. And send it to us.
I'm not going to read it.
No. I would like to hear other people's interweb bit of story project update, etc.
Yeah, that would be cool.
That'd be interesting.
Indeed.
All right, so soundtrack?
Soundtrack.
Okay, so I picked a song from Dark Side, which I guess was like a 3D asteroid sort of game.
It's not a Dark Lord of Apocalypse.
It is not. No, it's with an X.
Oh, well, that makes all the difference.
It's remixed by Akumajo Belmont, and it's called Starman, Don't Lose Yourself. And it's kind of very spacey.
Cool. Well, speaking of spacey, I think it's about time we headed back to our galaxy.
Yeah, it's been okay here, but let's get home.
Yeah, I don't want to be... I mean, it already sounds like there's a brawl going out. And last time we got involved in one of those, I couldn't, like, move my arm for, like, 3 days.
Yeah.
It was really sore. So, okay, are you all set?
I'm set. Let's get out of here.
So, until next time, folks, thanks for listening. Thank you for being with us for 6 years of episodes.
Dun, dun.
Podcasts. Hopefully, you'll be with us for another 6 years. Maybe. I can't imagine what it'll be like then.
Yeah.
Anyway, until next time, this has been Tim.
This has been Nick.
Bye.
Bye.